The following program is an MLWRadio.com production. 3-4.
Welcome to Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn on the MLW Network. And, of course, partnered with our good friends at WrestleZone.com, the most read wrestling news site on the planet. I'm Matt Kuhn. You can reach me at Matt Kuhn Music on Twitter. Or go ahead and follow the show on Twitter at Matt Kuhn TE. That's right. It's the same thing. But in any case, here we are. It is the podcast by a fan for fans. And what a week we have. Just got back from Mania Week. And damn, am I tired. But I want to tell you guys all about it. But I know you just don't want to hear from me. Last week, I wasn't sure if this show was coming back yet because of the issues we had with technology. But we were back, but I didn't have any guests, so I made a go by myself. I thought it was pretty good, but at the same time, I know people like the interviews. So we have Kerry Silken, who was the former owner of Ring of Honor. He is going to talk about the Ring of Honor big show partnered with New Japan Pro Wrestling at Madison Square Garden this past weekend, as well as bringing in someone who's kind of become kind of a buddy of mine, Mr. D'Lo Brown. Life is weird because D'Lo is someone I talk to pretty much every day. And D'Lo had some thoughts on WrestleMania and especially Kofi Kingston and the visceral, palpable, tangible reaction that so many had to it. And that some of us might not understand, but maybe he can kind of explain it to me. And of course, going to talk about the week at Mania we had. I'm not going to give you a match-by-match recap, but I'm going to tell you what we did. I'm going to tell you what you should do. I'm going to tell you some things I noticed and some highlights of the week this week on Total Engagement. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Total Engagement. And I have to make a confession to you. I thought I was totally engaged and 100%, even though at 40-something, the eyes have gone and the memory has faded just a little bit. But for the sake of science and commerce, I gave something a shot. That's right, guys, Blue Chew. I tried Blue Chew the other night, and I'm going to tell you what. It made a difference. It made a difference for me and the person who I was with is kind of demanding more Blue Chew in my life. Now I can be awesome anytime I want. And it's not just me, because Blue Chew can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed and remind you of those days when you're always ready to go. Listen up. It's BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. And it brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. So you know they work. You can take it any time of the day or night, full stomach, empty, and they're chewable, so they work twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready when the opportunity arises. It's not just for guys who can't perform, because let me tell you, it's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Even if you're like a one-and-out guy, you've always been a one-and-done kind of guy, Blue Chew can even help inspire you for a round two. Now, Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. No one likes the awkwardness, guys, the in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy. And so guess what? None of that. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. I said free. Try it now. If you've heard these ads and you don't know, trust your boy. Go to BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, and enter our special promo code, TOTAL. And all you do is pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code TOTAL, to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and I gotta thank them for helping me keep totally engaged. Sponsoring Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. All right, we are joined by D'Lo Brown. D'Lo, how are you doing today?
Dog, I'm fine, man. How you feeling? Everything good?
Everything's good, man. Now, I finally got to meet you over WrestleMania week. How long were you in town during WrestleMania week in New York City?
I was in from like Thursday till I got out of there Sunday morning. So not long, but just long enough. New York, I love the city, but I love it to visit, not to stay too damn long.
Now, you did a Nation of Domination kind of signing. I think that's the first one you ever did. What was it like to be with all the other guys from the Nation?
Dude, man, that's the first time that all four of us have been together. You know, we've been together, two of us or you know, three of us, but not all four of us. And to be around, like, your boys after all that time, it's like I just saw them yesterday. That's how it felt. But it's just cool being there in that same situation again with the Nation all together. It was damn fun.
How interesting has it been for you to see, for instance, Mark Henry go from a guy who was the youngest guy in the locker room, may have gotten some practical jokes played on him, to becoming this, you know, kind of elder statesman, this really great representative of the sport? It's really been a thing to watch him mature into this role, hasn't it?
Dude, it's freaking surreal, because I remember Mark coming in and him not really knowing, you know, how to lace his boots or knows way around locker room. And then I'm watching him this past weekend and I'm looking at how revered he is by the younger generation. It's so cool that he's now this older vet who's giving back to the young kids. It's an amazing journey, and I've got to see him take. It's pretty cool.
Now, as far as the week itself, did you get to watch any wrestling at all, or did you just kind of stay at the hotel?
Dude, I stayed at the hotel as much as I could, and then I just came home and watched Mania. There's only so much wrestling I can take in a weekend, because then I just go on wrestling overload, and it all starts to blend together. So I stayed away from as much wrestling as possible just so I could have Mania in my head.
Now, with Mania, it takes a long attention span to watch the whole thing. Were you able to stick out and watch a lot of it?
Luckily, I was watching at home, so I had the benefit of pause, walk away, go grab a beer, go get some food, come back, unpause. It takes a lot. I mean, 8 hours of wrestling, it's a long day.
And from your experience, do you think that's asking maybe too much from the audience, either live or at home, to kind of be engaged for that length of a show?
Here's the thing. Mania wouldn't be that long if people didn't want to see it. Mania has grown from 3 hours to 4 hours to 5 hours because people are actually consuming the product. Now, I don't know when it gets to the law of diminishing returns, when it's too long and people start to go the other way. But, hey, that crowd was still live at the end, so they were still there for it.
Speaking of the end, of course, the main event, the triple threat winner-take-all match between Becky and Charlotte and, of course, Ronda Rousey. What did you think of the contribution that Rousey made this year? I think she really helped to elevate everybody. A lot of people don't see it that way. How do you see the Ronda Rousey contribution this past 365 days?
I think when Ronda made her debut last year, she added a lot to the product because she brought so many eyes from the mainstream in. And then when you take a girl who had never done this, and you just throw in the deep end of the pool, Ronda was able to handle herself and hang in there with girls who've been doing this for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I think she added tremendous to the product this last year. And, you know, I'm looking forward to her return because, you know, you don't know where her star could go to.
We, of course, are joining you live from your wrestling school, you and Jake Roberts Wrestling School in Nevada. What's the name of your school and how can people get a hold of you?
It's the Snake Pit. You can get us on snakepit.com. We've got great trainers out here like myself, you know, Jake, Sin Bodhi, Kenny King, and oh yeah, there's that Disco Inferno guy. We've got a great school here. We're in conjunction with FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling, and I think we've got one of the best all around schools, promotions in the country, and I'm just proud to be part of it.
Now, Kenny King had a big weekend. Is he someone that people kind of sleep on as far as being a great talent kind of in the prime of his career?
Yeah, a lot of people, he's not been on that national scene as much. He had that run in Impact, but Kenny is one hell of a worker. He knows his business inside and out. His ring psychology is second to none. And, you know, I advise anyone out there, if they get a chance to get them, you know, see Kenny King live, you won't be disappointed.
All that happened at WrestleMania, so much to talk about, but I don't want to keep you too long from your students. Real quick, this Kurt Angle, Baron Corbin thing. A lot of people fans, you know, as Sami Zayn called him last night, critics have said, you know, Angle should have faced someone bigger or he should have won. I think my take is, you know, Baron Corbin's a guy who's a gold glove boxer and a football player. So he's a phenomenal athlete. What do you think about Baron Corbin using him in that situation? And do you think there's a merit to the complaints that Angle didn't go out the way he should have?
You know, in this business, you don't normally go out the way you should ever want to. And in my opinion, Kurt Angle, and for me, and I'll just say me as a worker too, I know when most guys retire, you don't want to take that glory with you. You need to give the rub to somebody else. You need to make that next generation. So it would have served no purpose for Kurt to win. But what it did was it gave Baron Corbin, it just gave him that rub, that touch from Kurt Angle. And that's going to propel, you know, Corbin into matches with Roman Reigns and McIntyre or whoever. You know, Corbin's going to be the guy who's going to be there next week. Kurt's going home. So I didn't have a problem with the way Kurt went out. It didn't bother me because that's how most of us are going to end up going out anyway. So it didn't bother me one bit at all.
As someone who's kind of intertwined with the history of wrestling, especially the Attitude Era, and who has seen a great change in wrestling, we saw Kofi Kingston win the Universal title on the big stage in a big match. And I saw a clip of MVP and Shad Gaspar watching it. Did you see that clip?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
They both had tears. They both had tears. And then when they embraced, they had an emotional thing. And a lot of people might not understand it, you know, and let's just say white people like me don't necessarily have that viewpoint, that point of view to truly understand why it would touch somebody at that level. Could you kind of put it into words to help me understand or help listeners understand why is that such an important thing? Why is it so monumental and so emotional for people of color?
Take a look at it in this perspective. In the history of wrestling, let's just give it 100 years, okay? Let's just call it that. And all the 10,000 wrestlers that are men of color, women of color, this is like the fifth black world champion out of the thousands and thousands of wrestlers who have ever, you know, gotten the ring. This is the fifth one. You know, it's Ron, it's Booker, it's Rocky, it's, you know, Mark, and now it's Kofi. I mean, it's a huge thing. All of those wrestlers who have gone in there, who have tried to get to the top of the mountain, only the fifth one ever. It's a big day. It's a huge moment in the history of wrestling, because now it's going to inspire that next generation of that wrestler with color who goes, there's somebody like me who looks like me that can be a world champion. Not just some guy who gets beat up, but I can actually be a world champion because now I have the blueprint to go by. It's a huge thing because it's just not something that happens every day. I mean, I've heard people go, why does it gotta be a black wrestler? It's the same as saying when you go, it's the first woman's tag team titles, because it's something that doesn't happen every day. So it's okay to draw attention to the fact that it's out of the norm, but it's cool as hell. And, you know, as a black wrestler, I sat there and if you had a camera on me in my house, I had a stream of tear coming down my eye because it's something you only hope to, like every black wrestler wants to be a world champion. Not every one of us gets that chance. And it's so nice to see someone, first of all, genuinely a nice guy like Kofi, who wasn't supposed to be in that spot, who by happenstance got put in it, and then he capitalized on it over a 3-month run, culminate on the biggest stage of it all. It doesn't get any bigger than Mania, and for him to win the world title right there, that's going to reverberate around the world of wrestling for years to come, more than when he doesn't have the title anymore. There's a 10-year-old kid right now who's going to go, the day I wanted to be a wrestler is the day I saw Kofi win the title. And that's going to be your champion 15 years from now. So it's huge, huge. I can't stress how important this is for people who look like me.
As a wrestler coming up and one who had a tremendous amount of talent and got some title reigns kind of early in your mainstream career, you, of course, probably felt like there were limitations on you, that you might have to work harder than the person next to you because of those racial factors growing up? Not WWE, just, you know, societally, you know, you always felt like maybe it wasn't in the cards for you?
You know, from the time I was young, my grandma always told me I had to work 10 times harder and be 10 times smarter than anybody else. And that's just how it was ingrained in us as a society growing up. So you carried that into your work. You carried that into wrestling. And I know I tried my damnedest to outwork people and to learn this business and to be everything I could. And, you know, sometimes it's just, was for me, it wasn't in the cards. Sometimes it isn't. But you were always taught from a young age. And I don't know if it's the same now, but we're always taught from a young age, work 10 times harder to get what you want.
What has it been like for you as a black man, not just a black wrestler, but a fan and a man watching wrestling in your lifetime, in my lifetime? We've gone from, you know, headbutts being more effective if you're a certain ethnicity to a point where Kofi wins a title. And I think what's not said enough is that it was almost an attempt at a post-racial win by Kofi, that he was a guy who got it through circumstance, but his race wasn't really a factor in holding him back. What has it been like for you to see that kind of metamorphosis in wrestling and society?
I love the fact that Kofi didn't have to, or the company didn't have to rely on stereotypes to get Kofi there. He didn't have to worry about being a black guy. He didn't have to worry about not having an opportunity. He was just a wrestler who got a shot. He was a wrestler who got a shot that cashed in on it and won. At no point did they go, here's a black guy going for the title. It was just, here's a guy. And I think society will work a lot better when we can just be, there's a guy, there's a girl trying to be what they want to be. And let's get away from labeling whether you're black, white, gay, straight, lesbian, whatever. You're just you in your profession trying to be the best you can be. Because that's how it's always been when you have a match with two white guys. No one ever talks about, here's an Irish guy trying to be the champion. It's just, there's a wrestler. You know, so I hope there's a day when it's just, there's two wrestlers in the ring fighting for the most important prize in all sports, the world title.
And this week you feel was maybe an important step in that direction?
I don't think it's an important step. I think it was the step. I think that's the step forward. And I think that's why you realize how big this is, where a black guy winning a title is normal and not something. It's special, but it should become normal. And when it becomes normal, then we're all on the same page.
I'm glad you had that reaction to it. And I'm glad to hear from you on this. One last thing about it. You said tears run down your face. What emotion would you describe that emotion when you see Kofi win the title? Not just win the title, but 80,000 people freak out that he won the title. Is that emotion joy? How would you describe it?
Do you remember when they took the camera shot and they showed the guys wearing the referee shirts?
Yeah.
That's the emotion right there.
Wow.
Just uncontrollable happiness, joy, elation. I wanted to get on the phone and start texting him, but I know I couldn't because I knew his phone was blowing up, you know. But just pride, and then, you know, deep down inside, there's a small part of you that's part of that. And that's cool as hell.
D'Lo, you're the man. I can't thank you enough for joining us. And I always look forward to talking to you. Thank you to all of the wrestlers there who are watching you do this interview. And I just want to thank you again for being here on Total Engagement.
Appreciate it, dog.
Of course, a couple weeks ago, I mentioned to go ahead and try to stay at the WrestleCon Hotel. It's a lot of fun. Plus, a lot of my friends were there. It was great to see my friend Conrad and Jeff Jewett and Mark Nilsson and Dave Hancock and, of course, Dave Silva, Tony Schiavone. Really good to see some really good friends. Jay-Z Flair, some of my best friends in the world. And at the WrestleCon Hotel, we also had the WrestleCon Super Show. So the WrestleCon Super Show is one of the best times of the year for us. We've been to 4 or 5 in a row, always surprises and great matches. It opened with Road Warrior Animal coming out. Ric Flair then came out, which was amazing to see Ric Flair. Still have never met Ric Flair, would love to one day. Pentagon and Phoenix came out, and I guess they had an open challenge. They talked some shit about the Young Bucks. If you don't know who Pentagon and Phoenix are, they're two great kind of post-Rey Mysterio luchadors who have kind of a strong style. It's not traditional luchador wrestling, but it's mostly luchador wrestling, but they're fantastic. Pentagon is kind of the bigger star. Phoenix, I think, is one of the best wrestlers in the world. I really enjoy watching them wrestle, and they ended up wrestling each other, and Phoenix got the win. Phoenix does some really cool stuff off the ropes. It's always good to see. But the highlight for a lot of people was the fifth match, which was Jushin Liger coming out with Sean Waltman, that's X-Pac, and the Hurricane in a six-man versus a group that call themselves the Revolt. And their names are Caleb Conley, who you might know from Impact, Jake Manning, who's known as the Man Scout, and Zane Riley. Now, I've seen these guys for years. They're from the North Carolina area. I believe they wrestled in AMW, which is the promotion out there. And with WrestleCade, you get to see them wrestle every year. They are fantastic. Caleb Conley is a lot like a lot of wrestlers these days, good-looking, young, can do the high-flying stuff. Jake Manning has a character where he is literally a grown-up Boy Scout, and he reads from the manual during the matches, and he's committed to it 100%, and he gets better every time I see him. And Zane Riley, who's kind of the big guy. You know, he's a big guy who's got a lot of charisma. I've seen him get his hair cut off by Brutus Beefcake before. I've seen him wrestle with Caleb Conley against Joey Ryan in the World's Cutest Tag Team before. A great team and the perfect foil for a Jushin Liger celebratory match. And you could tell that X-Pac and Hurricane were in celebration in being in the ring with Jushin Liger in one of his last matches on his retirement tour this year. Dragon Lee versus Carbonario. Carbonario is very good. Dragon Lee just won the title, the junior title, over at the G1 a couple days later at Madison Square Garden. Dragon Lee is one to watch. Like, maybe on this card, if you talk about two or three people to watch, Dragon Lee is someone you might not know who is fantastic. Keep your eye on him. He is going to be a big star. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Shane Strickland. My son and I have come around on Zack Sabre Jr. We just didn't really know what to take of him, what to make of him. He's a very skinny guy, but he's a heel. He's got this British accent, and he's got this style where it's this MMA style, but there's not a lot of punches. There's not a lot of kicks, but either he's improving or I'm coming around, because every time I see him, I just enjoy him more and more. Versus Shane Strickland, who is leaving after this weekend that we saw him to join NXT and the WWE. This is a little bit of a farewell tour for him. This was a really great match, a very realistic looking match, and with two guys working very hard and kind of beating the crap out of each other, hoping that they're not really hitting each other as hard as it looks. But a lot of fun reversals, it was probably my favorite match. And then we had a match I will never forget. I was really impressed. I think we saw a glimpse into the future of a huge star in wrestling. Some people, especially traditionalists, might say you're out of your freaking mind, but we'll get to that. But it was SCU, which is Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky, which are three guys who are in AEW. And of course, you might know Daniels and Kazarian as the Addiction from the Impact, or the years they put in TNA. They've really made a name for themselves and a brand as SCU and as a six-man team. And they took on Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor, who are also in AEW. If you're not hip to Trent, Trent's a former WWE guy who looks like a star, wrestles like a star. And Chuck Taylor is a guy who talks like a star. They play the role of best friends, and where they hold hands and do elbow drops and that kind of thing. It's a cool gimmick. But their partner was someone named Orange Cassidy. Now, a couple months ago, my son texted me while he was supposed to be in school, and he said, "Dad, you need to interview Orange Cassidy." Now, I'm trying, Matthew. I am trying to get a hold of that guy, but he's kind of tough. I didn't know what he was about. Matthew tried describing him to me. I didn't get it. So I'm going to try to describe it to you. Cassidy plays a character where he doesn't really want to wrestle. He really doesn't want to. He really doesn't care. He doesn't try hard, but he's not going to allow himself to get hurt. And he's not going to really make any effort hurt. So it starts with him with his hands in his pockets. Despite people taking his hands out of his pockets, him putting them back in his pockets to great cheers, he's got The fans in the palm of his hand, they are cheering for a guy putting his hands back in his pockets. He then, you know, his opponent, whoever it was, maybe it was Frankie, throwing him against the ropes, him running the ropes with his hands in his pockets and ducking clotheslines and just chilling, not really caring. When he does a chop, it's like the most half-hearted thing you've ever seen. And he wears these sunglasses, and the sunglasses appear to be magic, because when Chris Daniels puts on the sunglasses, a separate pair of sunglasses, he also attains the slacker type persona, and they do a chop fest that is the weakest chops you've ever seen, and the crowd loves it. It was fun. Now, the thing about the Orange Cassidy thing that really works, and I think this is the way it works after seeing him wrestle one time, is that once a match, the sunglasses accidentally come off, and he has fire, big fire. And he punches with fire, and he moves with fire, and he does a double hurricanrana. The glasses come back on, hands go back in the pockets. Fans cheer their asses off. It was a fun time. I ran into one of the wrestlers in this match afterwards, and I said, dude, that was fantastic. I just loved it, by the way. I just thought it was fantastic. And I told him, I said, dude, what a great match. I love that they had an entertaining match and no one had to do anything crazy or get hurt. And it was still fun. And this wrestler's like, well, there's a lot of ha-ha. Kind of looking at me as a fan and kind of going, there's a lot of ha-ha though, you know? And I said, dude, it was fantastic. I loved it. And he knows me as an older guy and a wrestling fan for a long time. I'm not sure if it meant shit to him. But in my mind, it made him think, well, there's one old guy who didn't hate it, because it was a lot of comedy and it was a lot of over the top. And let's take a little side trip, shall we, people? When it was posted online, check it out online, the slap fight he had with Christopher Daniels. It's hilarious. And people say, it's ruining wrestling. This is bullshit. This is the worst thing ever. You know what? This dude's going to draw a lot of money. And if you were there protesting, when The Rock was doing the people's elbow, or when people were giving headbutts and they didn't work because the other person was a different ethnicity that I guess had better headbutts, or if you believed in that the Undertaker is a zombie or whatever it is, and you can't enjoy this, then you're kind of picking and choosing what you're getting offended by. The fact of the matter is, whatever draws money, whatever's entertaining to the fans is fine. Talking to Dutch Mantel, he feels the same way. Of course, guys like Cornette feel differently. But my viewpoint is, it's a lot of old man talk. It's the same old man talk coming down the stairs to the basement. The kids are listening to the Beatles. They're like, turn that shit off. 10 years later, different parent coming down and the kids are listening to Zeppelin. Turn that shit off. 10 years later, it's classic. It's just old man talk. When you can't enjoy something that's obviously entertaining the younger people, but for you, as like back in my day, I thought it was fantastic. Check out Orange Cassidy. And Orange Cassidy, please give me a holler. I want to interview you. Now, a lot of people think the main event of the WrestleCon Super Show was the best match of the week. I don't think I'd disagree. Bandido versus Will Ospreay. If you don't know Will Ospreay, he is an amazing high flyer, like Ricochet turned up just a little bit. That's the kind of guy we're talking about. And he works matches really well as far as selling and all that kind of stuff. If you want to sit back and analyze it, if you want to sit back and enjoy a match like it's actually going on, Ospreay is one of those guys that can kind of let you suspend your disbelief. And taking on Bandido, who's a guy no one knew when he was booked in All In, and now everybody knows who he is. He wrestled at Bola, and he's been a Ring of Honor, and Bandido is another young up-and-coming guy. And I say that a lot because we have a lot of guys on the show that you should know about. So check them out. If you're one of these older guys like, wrestling sucks now, check out these guys. They're working their ass off, and they're doing creative stuff, and they're trying to create niches so they can make a living doing what they have a passion for. All right, so joining us right now, guys, Mr. Kerry Silken. Kerry, how are you doing today?
Very well, Matt. Thank you for having me on your show.
Now, for those people who don't know exactly who you are and what you have to do with Ring of Honor, a lot of people, when this big show happened at MSG this past weekend, tweeted and talked about, and they said things like, thank you, Kerry. Without you, this couldn't have happened. Without you, there'd be no Ring of Honor. Can you give us a little background as to what your relationship was with Ring of Honor and why people are so quick to give you so much compliments for Ring of Honor being around today?
I was not involved in Ring of Honor from the very beginning, although I wanted to be. I knew Gabe Sapolsky and the other guys who started Ring of Honor. And it was at the time when ECW was coming to an end. And that's where I knew them from going to the shows. And I knew Gabe had a good sense of what's going on in wrestling. And they felt they didn't need me. Fine. I went to the original Ring of Honor shows in Philly at the famous or infamous, one of the two, the Murphy Rec Centers. And they came to me about 6 months in for financial support. I got involved originally as a silent partner. Then there was a problem, as everyone knows, and if they don't know, they could look it up, but there was a problem, and it was either this individual goes or I go. And so this individual went, and I became the sole owner of Ring of Honor. Talk about a bridge over troubled waters. Oh, my goodness. But we made it out of it. And this is, and now we're getting into 04. The Samoa Joe, CM Punk era started in 05. And quickly, the company started growing. To speed it along, I was the sole owner until 2011 when the Sinclair deal started. During the whole time, Matt, I had no business. I didn't have any business. It was poor. The company never made any money. It was an art. And you could, as a musician, you could appreciate this. It was an artistic triumph, but a financial failure. Anybody, even like your son, would have told me, anyone who could do mathematics would have said, this isn't a good thing. You should let it go. But I really believed in the product. I was passionate. Of course, there was ego involved. And I held on to it. Fortunately, I was able to, due to my other business. But it was silly. And I had this thing in my mind: if it's going to jeopardize my entire livelihood, I'm going to get out of the wrestling business. I'm not going to be one of these promoters that gives it all away. And there's been many of them. Sure. So I was really looking to sell from like 2007 on. There were no buyers. One time, a representative of Jerry Jarrett sort of approached me, but it was just like a phone call. Didn't go anywhere. And then Jim Cornette, who was working with us on and off since 05, I had him come in the night that we lost Brian Danielson and Nigel, September of 2009. I had Jim come in as a surprise, and also Homicide, New York's own former Ring of Honor champ. And Jim wound up staying. We were doing TV with HDNet, and I needed somebody. And Dave Lagana was a big help also. And through Jim Cornette, he introduced me to Gary Juster. Gary Juster wanted to get back, you know, a long time WCW, even before that, NWA. He worked till the dying days of at the final WCW show, where Shane McMahon came in. That was Gary's show. Gary wanted to get back into the wrestling business, so he's really sick. So, but he knew Joe Koff. Joe Koff, who's the CEO at Sinclair, his wrestling lineage goes back to, you might remember this, the Battle of the Belts.
Oh, absolutely.
In the mid-80s. He was young, and he was a lifetime wrestling fan. This wasn't a Sinclair project. Anyway, he was involved in that. I think he produced them. And I met with him. So Jim to Gary to Matt to Joe Koff. And it took over a year to try to get the deal done. And the deal went down in May of 2011. And there we were with you Saturday night, just this past Saturday night, April 6th at Madison Square Garden. It's crazy.
And you would describe that absolutely as the high point in Ring of Honor history, what happened this past Saturday night, correct?
Absolutely. And just to get back, and I hate using these wrestling terms, but I'm not putting myself over, but it's just a fact. So the people you're referring to on Twitter, I guess the fact is that if I wouldn't have kept the company together, there wouldn't have been a Ring of Honor to sell. It would have died years ago.
And when you were the primary owner, when you had to step in and you had to lend your finances to it, and you were looking for a seller for a period of years, and it wasn't making money, was there a point where Ring of Honor was going to go out of business in that era?
Pretty much. I kept dumping money. I was so disgusted. It was going out of business. I really think that when the Sinclair offer came in, that just kept me. That wasn't until early 2010, and I was done. I was just done. I was so beat up, but there was a ray of hope. And the other thing that kept me alive was the HDNet deal with Mark Cuban. They paid us very fairly. So the Sinclair deal came in just the nick of time, because as much as I loved the product, as much as I believed in it, and I really did, and I still do, I was done. So that didn't happen. And the deal came through thanks to Joe Koff. And he convinced the Sinclair brass, this is a pimple on an elephant's ass for these guys.
Right, right.
The deal that didn't go down recently, I believe Sinclair was going to buy Tribune Broadcasting for $3 billion.
Right.
So in the scheme of their business, this is nothing. But it's good for their company. When they purchased the company, they were getting an hour of television for all their affiliates, which I guess is cheaper than buying repeats of, you know, Three's Company or Seinfeld or something. And now they had like 70 something affiliates at the time. And now I believe they have 180, and they're doing well with the company. They're very happy. They're very vested in the product. So we're alive and well, Matt.
How much of a toll? You said personally it took a toll, and probably with your time and your life and your years, but financially, from the time you entered the wrestling business, the time you left, how much of a financial toll did that take on you, or did you get out okay?
Fortunately, I did okay in the ticket business. And fortunately, I'm not, you know, I don't have a family. I'm not married with kids. I got plenty of kids. They're all in WWE, right, and starting their own promotion out on the West Coast and TNA or Impact. But so I had some money to burn, and I burned it. It was heavy. But it was like, once again, it wasn't where I was going to risk losing everything. So I kept things in check.
With MSG, and we'll get to the show in just a second, but we talked, you're a lifelong New Yorker. You made your money in the ticket business in New York. You also have been somebody who's gone to MSG for years. You talked about that Zeppelin was a little disappointed. This is when we talked personally. Zeppelin was a little disappointing to you. Jethro Tull changed your life. You've seen a million things at the Garden. You were there when Snuka jumped off the cage. Talk about how important this MSG show was to you personally, beyond the Ring of Honor thing.
Well, as we spoke about outside, my dad took me to some Ranger games at the New Garden. He was a bartender, and he would get tickets from these, friends of his, liquor distributors. He worked at a really nice jazz club. It was a better clientele. So he knew guys that were lawyers, salesmen. They'd slide him tickets. They loved it. My father's name was Phil. They used to call him Fill 'em Up Phil. He was a cool cookie. A lot of my shtick I got from him. So we would go to hockey. He would take me to Yankee Stadium. He didn't like pro wrestling. He liked the real sports. But he put up, I'm sure like your family, he put up with it, though.
Right.
You know, and he's, you're watching that junk. So anyway, they had this blue law in New York, New York State Athletic Commission. They enforced it at the Garden. You had to be 14 years old to go to boxing or wrestling. It went away in 1974. But my 14th birthday was 1971. They also did not allow masked wrestlers. That's why we never saw the Destroyer. They didn't allow women wrestlers, nor did they allow, these cage gimmick matches, cage matches, chain matches. Anyway, my 14th birthday, my dad gets me tickets. And I had been to some house shows in Jersey, and he gets me tickets for the Garden. And it's my favorite bad guy, Freddie Blassie, who was in his last run, 52 years old. You know, and Blassie's doing the heel gimmick. He's the vampire, Freddie Blassie, against the new WWF champion, Pedro Morales. And it was magic. And I started going regularly. I had a cousin who you met, my cousin Mike, 4 years older than me. So we started going every month. And this morphed into my concert era, Zeppelin, Tull, McCartney, Quadrophenia, Elton John, the night John Lennon came out. We would go to anything. We didn't care if it was Black Sabbath or Billy Joel. We liked it all. We didn't care if it was Bad Company or the Allman Brothers. We liked it all. We didn't care if it was Styx. We liked it all. We went. And I'd been in the Garden so many times. And this continued. This wasn't just a 70s thing. The wrestling continued into the 80s. You mentioned the snooker thing. I was in attendance at WrestleMania 1, which is a podcast unto itself, because me and my friend Harry only had $40. And it was, we made our way in somehow. We'll save that for another talk. But I continued going to concerts all this time. And I was at Elton John 3 weeks ago before the Ring of Honor show. And naturally, it was fantastic. But here's the thing, Matt. I'm sitting there watching Elton John, and I'm saying, oh, shit, we are going to be out there at the Garden. We're going to, you know, it's going to be us out there. It was surreal. And that's when it really hit me. It just, right up until the day we walked in the back, it was like not, it just wasn't real. But once I got in the building that night, I was so nervous. I told you I was so nervous. I told everybody.
Right.
I just mellowed out. And the show started, and it felt like any other show, except we had 17,000 people screaming. And if we could have written a script, I don't think it could have went any better.
With Ring of Honor booking the Madison Square Garden, there was, I think a lot of people at first thought it was kind of implied that some of the elite guys would be there. Turned out they weren't. But what did help, I think, is this partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Over the years, Ring of Honor have had some partnerships, some coordinations. Talk a little bit about how great a partnership that is with New Japan and what that has meant to Ring of Honor as a company in the last few years.
Okay, well, it has to be preceded by our partnership with Pro Wrestling NOAH. Because that was our original Japanese company with Morishima, and who was in Ring of Honor champion, and Kenta, and Marufuchi, and they hosted us twice in Tokyo. And eventually, when the company changed hands, that relationship sort of dissipated. There were a lot of changes in NOAH, and the New Japan relationship came up. And it was, listen, there's no, I'm not here to bullshit anyone. That was a key to the show. Besides the WrestleMania factor, New Japan's involvement was a key. I mean, any savvy wrestling fan who wants to see quality wrestling, that was the cherry on the, you know, the cherry on the cake and all that. And these guys have been fantastic to work with. They're like another level, you know, and they're so professional. I have not personally gone over to the Tokyo Dome or to any of these shows, but everyone has great things to say about them. The talent is ridiculous, and we're very lucky to have them on our side.
Now, you've had some great relationships with a lot of talent over the years. I see you so proud of the Seth Rollins, and a lot of these other guys have come through Ring of Honor, Samoa Joe, CM Punk. But there's a couple guys now that you have long-time relationships with. Talk a little bit about what it means to have someone like Jay Lethal wrestling in the Garden in front of all these people for this company.
He's my friend. You know, it's just like life. You have people that you're close with. There are some wrestlers that have been around forever. Or people on the staff that it's just, hey, what's up? And that's the end of it. You know, we're just never got close. It's okay. But Jay and I are close. And for him to get a shot at why he's not a star in WWE, I'll never know. That's a mystery of mankind. But Lethal was so excited. And the week of the show, he came up early. His parents live in Elizabeth, New Jersey, only like 30 minutes from the city. And I said to Jay, hey, have your parents ever been to Broadway? He's like, no. They would love to go to anything. I said, what do you think they would think about the new Temptations show? So there's a new Temptations Broadway musical based on the Temptations. They're not called Ain't Too Proud to Beg. And I took them, as well as Dalton Castle. And it was so special. You know, during the first act, when the David Ruffin guy did My Girl, I got sunshine. This is Lethal. She yells out, sing it, baby. It was sweet. But Lethal, he's the man. He's such a good guy. And he was just so, he was so thrilled, excited. And I think he delivered. Everyone delivered. I can't say anything bad about the show, really.
When you look at the story of you being a lifelong New Yorker, you being an MSG diehard who would go to any concert that showed up.
Not to mention scalping tickets in front of the Garden for 4 years.
And you add that to the fact that you saved this company and you were integrated. Now you role as the ambassador of the company. And to have it all come to a head with this Ring of Honor show this past year, or this past weekend, it's a fairy tale story. But nobody was happier in New York than you that weekend. After the show was over, what were your feelings about what you just saw?
I was relieved. You know, I had spoke to Delirious, our booker, on Thursday or Friday. Maybe it was at the fan festival. I forget. And we looked at each other and said the same thing. We'll be happy when this is over. As much as the anticipation was, and as excited as to be out there, we just wanted to get this behind us. There was a lot of pressure just to pull it off. But once again, I'm being redundant, but when the show started, that all went away. And it just felt like we were at any other show. So leaving the show, it was like a huge weight off my shoulders and just such joy. There I am, walking out of the Garden where there's a couple of hundred people behind the barricades like I used to do back in the 70s at the WWF shows. And it's surreal for me. People are like, Mr. Silken, hey, Carrie. I'm so grateful. A lot of people don't get to experience this kind of, I don't know if adulation is the right word. People are sincere, thank you for what you've done. Thank you. I'm like, what did I do? You know, but I kept it together. So it was a beautiful thing. I'm very, I use these corny words. I'm very blessed. It's awesome.
Well, we're definitely blessed to have you on. Carrie, I can't thank you enough for being on, especially in the wake of this wild roller coaster ride that took place over the last few days. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I just want to thank you for being on Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. And I hope to see you in the future soon. And before we leave, let me just ask you this. Where do you think, as the ambassador for Ring of Honor, what does the future hold for Ring of Honor over the next couple of years? Where do you see it going?
Are we going to be back at the Garden? Are we going to be doing major arenas? Who knows? Maybe. Maybe this probably isn't the answer you want, but we're just looking at next weekend when we're going to be in Pittsburgh doing our TV taping and Columbus and just going from there. We got a tour coming up with New Japan in May. It's like a four-show tour. I'm going to say the wrong name of it. Global Wars or War of the Worlds or something like that. But so there's some good stuff on the horizon. We're going to be back in New York in July. Hey, Matt, maybe you'll come up with your son in July.
You know, count on it, man. And you know what?
I'll give you a rock and roll tour of the city. You'll go up to where John Lennon was shot. I'll show you Electric Lady Studios. We'll go to CBGB's. We'll hang out. It'll be warm out. We'll smoke a cigarette and chill out and have a good time.
That sounds like a plan, Kerry. Thanks for joining us this week, man.
My pleasure, man.
Sunday was WrestleMania Day, and we went to the Bullet Club block party. Guys, it was open bar. It was all you can eat from Jimmy's Seafood. It was a picture with all of the Bullet Club. It was signatures from all of the Bullet Club. It was hanging out with 1,000 other wrestling fans in a great environment, in a fun environment with music and games and food and wrestlers walking around. I would recommend it to anybody. There's also a shuttle running to WrestleMania and, most importantly, back from WrestleMania, where a lot of people got stuck, but us taking the shuttle ended with us being able to get back in the hotel at a decent hour, unlike a lot of those people stuck at MetLife. The Bullet Club block party was an amazing time. Great to see Ron Funches there. Great to see Mark Nilsson there. Jeff Jewett. I'm sorry I missed Eric Rotten Crotch there. I know that's not his real name, but got to see a lot of cool people. Did a couple interviews. Met DJ Z. It was a good time, and I would recommend Bullet Club Block Party. Maybe go out of your way to go to the Bullet Club Block Party. I would talk about WrestleMania, but I am still there because the card was so long. If you saw after the Becky match, people just left. No one hung out. Like, the stadium was empty in 15 minutes because people were so tired and so worn out. They got to do something about that. I don't want to jump on that bandwagon or say something obvious, but come the fuck on. Shorten that shit. And anybody who thinks it should be 2 days long, just go away. Just make Mania shorter. I don't know if I can do it again. I have to be quite honest with you. But all in all, a fantastic week. The important thing was spending time with my son, going to the Museum of Modern Art, Times Square, Madison Square Garden, Rockefeller Center, lots of cool stuff to do in New York City, and watch some wrestling. And thank you to all those people who came up and talked to me and said, we love the show, or is your show back, or what the fuck's up with your show, or where's Robbie, or what's it like to work with Vince Russo, or any of those things. I always appreciate seeing you guys and hanging out with you guys. And I'm going to see you guys and hang out with you next week on Total Engagement.
Stops.